south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, today let's start with this email from Bruce. I had a dog named Bruce. You know, when you name a kid Percy or Dick or Bruce, you're setting them up for an awful time with the kids in the schoolyard. Parents ought to know better. But dogs, they don't care. Anyway, Bruce, not to poke fun at your name, but I got a feeling you came up the hard way. You got into way too many scraps just because your parents, probably your ma, decided to give you that cute little name, Bruce. But I digress. And so early in the show, too, huh? Man, I could tell what this one's going to be like. Anyway, Bruce from Oklahoma says, "Dear Johnny, what's your take on climate change and global warming?" Well, Bruce, as you know, I've been out of the U.S. for something like 30 years now. So I can only give you facts and opinions about climate change and such here in Latin America. So is the climate changing? Yes. Are we experiencing global warming? It appears so. Is it man-made? Well, yeah, in a way we all contribute. It's insect, animal, plant, and man-made. Every living creature in some small way contributes to climate change and global warming. Or cooling, depending on what segment of history or time you're talking about. And of course, when people ask questions like, what's your take on climate change and global warming, what they're really asking you, because it's a politically charged question, you know, it should be purely scientific, but it's heavily politicized. What they're really asking is if you think man is the bad guy in all this. Ask yourself why it's always about the phrase global warming and not climate change. Well, it's because you got the media and you got something like 90% of scientists polled saying we're in a phase of global warming right now. So do I believe that? Well, you could go about this a couple different ways. One, look at all the scientific data. Two, listen to the politicians, bloggers, and talking heads who aren't scientists, who are wagging the dog and are sometimes totally full of shit. I'm talking about jerks with agendas who figure out ways to make money off of things like this. For example, selling carbon tax credits and such. And how about all those so-called blue ribbon commissions and committees? All they are is just giant taxpayer junkets. Why are they always at cushy, faraway resorts like Mallorca and Cancun? I've seen those, personally. In fact, last time I was at a big, cushy, extravagant, all-inclusive resort in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, who do you think I ran across while checking in? A gigantic caravan of international bureaucrats. They were out to fix the world with 4 days of champagne and caviar, on your dime, of course, not theirs. In fact, over half the resort was booked with pompous, bureaucratic dickheads. And you know, it's amazing how these global warming strategists really know their wine lists and Cuban cigars. Wait a minute, don't cigars contribute to global warming, or is it cooling? Amazing how you can make a good case for both. And of course, they all had to fly in from all corners of the globe. Many of them, the top dogs, flying business in first class. Again, on your dime. That's just another reason I don't believe anything that comes out of the mouths of politicians and bureaucrats. I don't care what subject they're blathering about. Because really, when you break it all down, it's all about the money. With the politicians and bureaucrats, it's not about saving the planet. It's about living the high life, having an overblown job title, getting reelected or reappointed, and having and accumulating as many useless paper-pushing slugs working under you as possible. So now we've got yet another huge, malignant, bloated bureaucracy, which grew multiple heads like a hydra from the global warming climate change thing. And it really surprises me when I see some very smart folks buying into everything the mainstream media says about global warming and climate change, and yet out of the other side of their mouths they're saying mainstream media is fake news and they don't trust a single thing they say. I don't get it, but I do know one thing. When I'm sitting in the taxi, and I do that a lot, I like to quiz the local Uber and taxi drivers about things like climate change. And when I go to those big food and produce markets, and I go to those all the time, I like to quiz the little ladies selling this stuff. Yep, and it's mostly ladies. And I quiz the little guys bringing the stuff in on pickup trucks. And yes, the grunt workers and pickup truck guys are almost exclusively men. How sexist and classist, huh? We gotta get some gringo do-gooders in here to fix those inequalities, don't we? Just a little touch of social democratization, and that'll fix everything, right? Social democracy, yeah, that's what Burnt Bernie and Occasional Cortex are calling socialism these days. Plays better in the sound bites, right? Anyway, over the last year or two, I must have asked 100 taxi, Uber drivers, truck drivers, small farmers, etc., if global warming and climate change has affected them, and if so, in what ways, and what do they think is causing it? And of course, these are just straw, unofficial man-on-the-street polls, but they're the real boots-on-the-ground people in the thick of it. These are people who are not getting their news from the idiot CNN talking heads who are just reading words. So then, what have I been hearing? Yes, there is climate change. The storms are a bit crazier and more severe. The droughts are longer and more intense. In other words, the guys in the thick of it with the boots on the ground are saying the climate change is a bit more drastic and more obvious. However, almost none of them are saying it's getting warmer year over year, nor are they saying it's getting cooler. You get it? They're saying the climate is changing with colder cold spells, warmer warm spells, wetter rainy seasons, drier dry seasons. But all in all, they're not saying it's getting hotter. Of course, a few have said that, but only because they've heard it on TV and in the news. But when talking about their own personal experience, they're in no way saying things are definitely getting warmer year over year. Though everywhere else, especially up in the first world, people are saying it's true. So what do you make of that? Well, I'll tell you what, if you look to the first world news, every time there's a big crop failure, whether it's pineapples, coffee, or bananas, the talking heads say, see, it's global warming. There's the proof. Meanwhile, the guys in the banana and coffee fields will tell you it's because the rainy season was too wet or the dry season too dry, and the man upstairs, God, just didn't deliver as expected. Because, you know, every time there's a tragedy or something bad happens here in Latin America, the local guys and gals will tell you it's in los manos de Dios, in God's hands. And when something good happens, it's because the kid was smart or the guy was good in business or some guy or gal had a lucky break. It really doesn't make much sense, but this is Latin America. When bad things happen, it's in the hands of God, and when good things happen, he's got nothing to do with it. Now, I gotta tell you a personal experience I've had talking about rising sea levels. You know, you've heard it, how in a couple of years, so many hundreds of coastal cities in places like Florida, etc., are predicted to be flooded out, even non-inhabitable. And we see some of that happening right now. And of course, all the mainstream talking heads, etc., are saying it's because of global warming and glaciers melting, adding more water to the sea, causing permanent rising levels and such. Well, let me tell you what I think is wrong with that assessment and the fly in the ointment I keep seeing. Ever since the very first time I went to Venice, Italy, back in 1985, that's when I first came upon a very strange phenomenon. It bugs me to this day. Now, that was before the internet, so naturally I did the tourist thing and bought the folders, books, and the maps, and did the walking tours and took a gondola ride. Man, I'll tell you, don't do that. It's way too expensive. It was something like $100 back then. And that was just for a half an hour ride with a Dean Martin lookalike in a Renaissance waiter's outfit. And that $100 didn't even include him singing O Sole Mio. He wanted an extra sawbuck for that. I know. Now you're wondering, what's that got to do with Latin America? We're getting there. Bear with me. Well, the gondola guy proceeded to point out the high water mark on all the 15th century Romeo and Juliet style buildings we were passing as we made our way through the canals. And at the time, get this, he pointed out one particular high water level etched in a building wall. It was marked at 6.5 feet above sea level. Sea level being the average level of the Adriatic Sea that day. The Adriatic Sea being part of the Mediterranean Sea. And I said, wow, how often does the tide rise that high? He said, about every 50 years. Then I said, how do people put up with it? How can you live in a place where the tide fluctuates that much? He says, well, we call in the army. They know just how to evacuate people, he said. And then while in the gondola, we passed a park. Then he pointed out a monument to sea and land soldiers, commemorating the help given by the Army and the Navy during a catastrophic flood of, get this, 1882, where the water was 8.5 feet above normal sea level. Which brings us right back to December 2019, this month. If you've been watching the news lately, you've seen Venice, where the flood levels this month have reached a 50-year high. Turns out back on November 4th of 1966, the water rose to 194 centimeters. That works out to a high tide level of about 6'4" above walking street level. So what you're reading in the paper and seeing on TV today is that Venice has reached catastrophic flooding levels due to, of course, global warming. Well, here's the part that I and many scientific types don't get. If you do a little research into the historical records of Venice, they always mention the dates where they've had disastrous flood levels. They mention the years 782, 840, and 885. The worst seems to have been in 1112 AD, where they record the complete destruction of Metamelco. That'd be the building that was Venice's political center. There, historians wrote that the floodwaters were taller than men. Albeit, Italian men were mighty short back then, but still, even that wasn't the worst of it. In the 15th century, extreme floods and high tides taller than a man were recorded in 1419, 1428, 1430, 1444, and 1445, in 1442 as well. Then in the 18th century, records became more formalized and precise. You can see the markings on the walls as you walk through the city. They had high tide floods in 1727, again, taller than men, 1738, 1729, 1742, 1746, and then Christmas Eve, 1792, Christmas Day, 1794. However, the Venice flood and high tide that took the cake, at least in modern recorded history, took place on November 5th, 1686, where several chroniclers of the time reporting that the waters had reached the outdoor floor of Sansovino's Lodge, which is the entrance to the Campanile di San Marco, which means that big flood and high tide in 1686 was around 254 centimeters above today's standard sea level, which puts that high water tide level at 8 foot 4 inches. That's 2 feet higher than the 50-year high of December 2019 this month. So, how do you explain that? Now, if, as the pundits and talking heads on TV say today, global warming is out of control, they say just look at what's happening in Venice today. It's proof. So what do? They just cherry-pick the last 50 years and don't go back any farther? So explain to me how, in the last 500 years, similar high tides and worse have occurred at least 20 times. And at least once, back in 1686, the floodwaters were almost 2.5 feet higher than they are today. Now, some people, even people a little smarter than the average bear, might say, yeah, but Johnny, sea level's not the same everywhere. It's different in the Adriatic and Mediterranean Sea than it is in the Atlantic, where Florida is. Well, not so fast. You could look it up and find that over a 100-year period, the difference between sea level in the Mediterranean and sea level in the Atlantic Ocean can vary as much as 10 inches. That's over a 100-year period, which blows a hole in that argument. So then back in 1686, was it too many factories belching out smoke? Too much horse manure decomposing in the sun? Too many cow farts? I don't think so. The steam engine wasn't even invented yet. Yet you go to a party. In fact, I just went to a Christmas party the other day, and there were a bunch of college-educated people there, and the subject of global warming came up. And sure enough, one of these guys, in fact, it was a gal, started talking about the floods of Venice as proof that human-initiated global warming is destroying the planet. Now, of course, me being me, armed with a few tidbits of information about Venice myself, I butted in, but not too abruptly. First of all, asking any of them if they've ever been to Venice before. None of them had. It figures. That's when I started laying a few facts on them, and soon enough their eyes glazed over and they started to inch their way towards the bar. So then, what do I say these days when someone asks if I believe in global warming and climate change? I say I definitely believe in climate change. It happens all the time. The rest I can speculate and take a guess on, but factually and scientifically, that's all I know for sure. The thing is, you see, I also, when I get interested in something, research the hell out of it. In a way, that's one of my faults. I will pursue things, sometimes to the point of extreme overkill. In other words, I've been known to piss people off. Let me ask you this. What do you do when you're at a party or get-together and someone says something that's obviously wrong, and you know, if you open your mouth, you could set things straight, but it will ruffle some feathers. Sometimes it's best to just walk away because it's not worth it. Problem is, people are so vested in their own opinions and ideas, they just don't want to be confused with the facts. Why is it today, suddenly, there are different versions of the truth? And that doesn't make sense. How can that be? Just look at your average pusbag politician. When caught dead in a lie, they don't apologize and say, I was wrong or I lied. They say things like, I misspoke, or I inadvertently acted on erroneous information. Man, the jerks today they've got in media and politics, what a bunch of weenies. They should have all been named Dick. Oh, and speaking of given names that set a kid up for a pretty tough life from day one, how come it's always a little boy thing? Seems like girls don't have analogous names like Dick. That'll set them up for bullying and a lot of future angst. By the way, this just off the presses, December 6, 2019, it says, for the first time, Mohammed is one of the top 10 most popular baby names for boys in the USA. That, according to data from the parenting website, BabyCenter.com. Meanwhile, the name Liam was the most popular name for boys in the U.S., pushing out Jackson, which had spent six consecutive years on the top of the list. Sophia remains number one for girls, marking a decade as the number one top choice. Speaking of names that your parents picked that are sure to get you an ass-whooping once in a while from the kids in the schoolyard, consider this. Do you think any of the following names that are most popular for boys in 2019 will rate excessive bullying and ass-whoopings? All right, here's the list. Number one, Liam. Two, Jackson. Three, Noah. Four, Aiden. Five, Grayson. Six, Caden. Seven, Lucas. Eight, Elijah. Nine, Oliver. 10, Mohammed. Well, who knows when these kids come of age, whether or not they'll be singled out for bullying or ass-whooping. But if you ask me, my vote's on Caden. Oh, and by the way, according to the UK newspaper, Independent, and the parenting website, babycare.com, the number one boy baby name in England for 2018? Mohammed. I know what you're thinking. Oh, and just for your information, the most popular names for girls in 2019 in the U.S. Number one, Sophia. Two, Olivia. Three, Emma. Four, Ava. Five, Aria. Six, Isabella. Seven, Amelia. Eight, Mia. Nine, Riley. 10, Alaya. Man, I remember back in the 90s when the number one name for girls was Brittany. And I wonder now that those girls have come of age how they feel about being named after a has-been druggy psych case named Britney Spears. Well, it could have been worse. Could have been Madonna. And think about all those newborn kids in the 90s who were named after Kurt Cobain. A lot of 20-something Kurts running around. I wonder if they even know who their manic, depressive, ritalinized, suicidal namesake was. But I digress. Now, as far as the most popular Latino and Latina baby names, we'll get to that shortly. Though I think you're going to find this next little bit very interesting. Riddle me this. What was the loudest sound ever heard by a human? No, it wasn't Michael Moore farting. Good guess, but no cigar. Now, when you think about it, you might think it was an atomic bomb. Turns out, on August 27th, 1883, just after 10 a.m., the eruption of Volcano Krakatoa in Indonesia was said to have made the loudest sound ever heard by humans. When it blew, it sent a sound wave around the world four times, with people 3,000 miles away on the island of Rodriguez in the Indian Ocean hearing the noise. It was so powerful that sailors on a British ship 40 miles from the explosion suffered ruptured eardrums, with the captain writing in his journal that he believed Judgment Day had come. And in Australia, 2,000 miles away, people thought a war had started. Now, this article in Discover magazine says, when Krakatoa blew, it was so astonishingly loud that it's inching up against the limits of what we mean by sound itself. Then you've got nuclear scientists today estimating that Krakatoa had the force of 10 to 12,000 Hiroshima bombs. Some say twice that, equivalent to a 50 to 100 megaton nuclear blast. It caused a 120-foot-high tsunami and completely wiped out 165 coastal villages and 36,400 people. Now, here's the part that's of interest to us. It says, volcanic matter ejected into the atmosphere at the time filtered sunlight and caused sunsets so vivid that people in New York called the fire department, fearing blazes outside the city. Now, here's the part that might make you reassess your thinking on global warming. In the year following Krakatoa's eruption, the average global temperature fell by 1.2 degrees Celsius, and the Earth remained abnormally cool for five or so more years, until the Earth itself and its ecosystems brought the temperature back to homeostasis again. Now, remember, we started this show with an email from Bruce, asking me my opinion on global warming, climate change, and the human effect, the human contribution to said phenomena. All right, now, pay attention. According to a continuous study conducted by NASA's Goddard Institute, the Earth's average global temperature has risen by 0.8 degrees Celsius, or 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit, in the last 140 years. That 140 years is significant because that was considered the very start of the Industrial Revolution, when we, humans, first started creating factories and polluting the air. Now, of course, nothing good can come of global warming, but humans can adapt to that much better than global cooling. Most all scientists are in agreement on that. So here's the point, and it's really great stuff when you get into a discussion about global warming, etc. If just one big volcano, Krakatoa, lowered the temperature of the Earth 1.2 degrees, that means all the dust, soot, and volcanic ash in the atmosphere blocked the sun's rays enough to cause that drop. Again, that's 1.2 degrees Celsius in 1 year. Meanwhile, NASA scientists today say that in the last 140 years, since the Industrial Revolution began, the temperature of the Earth has risen 0.8 degrees Celsius, or 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a smaller effect in 140 years than Krakatoa made in just 1 year. So then what does that do to the proposition that humans are responsible for the greater percentage of climate change and global warming? Look, if it took 140 years to raise the temperature 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit and 1 year for one volcanic explosion to lower the Earth's temperature 2.16 degrees Fahrenheit, well, what conclusions do you draw from that? Now, that's not to deny that humans aren't contributing to global warming, etc. Every person, animal, and plant contribute something to the end result. It's just that I take exception to people with zero scientific background or just enough knowledge to make them dangerous, spouting off about climate change as if the book's already been written. So are humans the bad guys? Hey, maybe we are. We definitely pollute the shit out of the planet. But in the end, you know, it'll be the planet that survives, not us. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, why in the hell is he talking about that stuff? He's supposed to be talking about Latin America. Well, I just thought, you know, next time you get yourself into a discussion about global warming, climate change, cow farts and stuff, you'll have a little bit more information in your hard drive. Just think, you'll be able to baffle and amuse the gym, locker room, and cocktail party crowd. Well, maybe not. But, you know, the more knowledge and information you have, the better to defend whatever side of the argument you happen to be on. All right, enough said about that. Probably way too much said about that. So we'll take a hard right turn here and read an email that comes from, well, maybe it's better I don't say his name. You'll probably see why as we get into this. He says, Johnny, you're the real deal, a good guy. I enjoy your show very much and am readying my plan B. Problem is, I was just served legal separation papers by my wife of 27 years last week. So I'll be paying out of the nose for some time. I have one child at home and two others who are on their own. Now, Johnny, my soon-to-be ex is still a great-looking gal at 52, but probably won't marry off for quite a while, so she says. And as for me, when I turn 60 in 4 years, I'd like to head your way, south of the border. Personally, I've enjoyed south of the border extended stays with real people off the Gringo Tourist Trail, and I'm certain that kind of a Plan B setup will work for me. Of course, you know with a divorce I'll have half as much money to spend as planned, but I just want to say thanks for all of your advice, Johnny. But on to the point of this email. In listening to your November 29, 2019 and December 1st, 2019 podcast, you gave out much good info on EMF equipment. I too am an engineer, Johnny, an aerospace engineer. And here's my question. Are there any shieldings available for cell phones that don't outright block signal? And I can't believe that those little sticker-style gumdrop things do anything to protect the wearer of a cell phone when it's in close contact. And yes, Johnny, unfortunately, I know a guy personally who got cancer in the quad muscle exactly where he pocketed his cell phone for years. This guy, my friend, being a fellow aerospace engineer too. Then he says, also, Johnny, your listener named Sue in the So Dated podcast I mentioned requested a bunch of links and info, etc. If you did, by chance, send her an email addressing all of her requests, can you please send me all that she asked for, too? One more thing, Johnny. Unfortunately, with the divorce, my money is in limbo now. Otherwise, I would have loved to have attended your seminar that's coming up. Then he finishes by saying, Johnny, I really appreciate all your help. Signed, and we'll call him Mr. AE for Aerospace Engineer. Now, get this. The email comes from Gulfstream Aerospace Corporation, a division of General Dynamics, coming out of the Structural Design Division. Just a little note here. You know, Mr. AE works for one of the biggest military contractors in the universe, General Dynamics. But we won't hold that against him because he is working on a Plan B. Now, of course, many of you have probably heard of Gulfstream. They make all those really great personal and business jets. Learjet, you know, is their competition. Anyway, the reason why I'm pointing this out is to mention that it's a fact. I get an unusual amount of email From engineers, scientists, nerds, cops, and members of the U.S. military, all of them either thinking about a plan B or somewhere on the timeline of a plan B. Now, you got to ask yourself, why would so many people working for the U.S. government or contracted by the U.S. government want to get the hell out of Dodge? Doesn't that strike you a bit odd? Well, I'm sure it does to Joe Lunchbucket. Yeah, right, as if Joe still carries a lunch bucket. Yep, poor Joe Average. You got to feel sorry for him. Plugging away at his treadmill, popping his 5 meds at 50, just looking to pay his rent every month, his credit cards, and his Netflix bill. Well, unfortunately, a plan B is never going to be part of his game plan or universe. Which brings us back to the question of why I get so many emails from professionals, scientists, engineers, military, and government workers. Some of them well entrenched in the system, who you'd never expect would want to get the hell out of Dodge. Not to mention they've been in the game a long time and looking forward to pretty good pensions, yet so many of them are thinking about and working on their plan Bs. Seems like for a lot of these guys, the closer they are to the head of the beast, the more they want to get far, far away because they know they'll never be able to slay the dragon. So all you guys and gals on the fence about your plan B right now, think about it. What do these guys and gals, professionals inside of government, know that we don't? Well, one thing's for sure, the ones with a brain know how up things really are, and they want to get the hell out of Dodge now. But unfortunately, as with the case of Mr. AE, other things in life often screw up your plans, and the other problem I see is that so many people are hanging on a few more years to get the most out of their pensions. In other words, they've set a goal and a timeline into the future somewhere based on what their pensions are going to put out, hoping their world will remain somewhat stable until then. That, I think, is a big mistake, because all those tipping points that are near to crashing and burning are so close at hand. I really think it's a big mistake to think that things are going to remain somewhat stable even a year or two out. In other words, I believe it's imperative that you're not just thinking about a plan B, that you're somewhere along that timeline already. In other words, you've got some boots on the ground in Latin America, have selected a place or a country, have hooked up with a lawyer, and hopefully have a bank account, and have started your residency process. Because, you know, those windows of opportunity are closing fast. And, you know, as Mr. A.E. mentioned in his email, he's getting hit hard in the wallet by his impending divorce. Otherwise, he'd be coming to my January 2020 seminar. He might not be able to make this one. But you can still get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B by coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar, which kicks off in about 3 weeks now, starting January 10th. So do check it out. Just go to www.TheExpatFiles.com and click on Johnny's seminar link for complete information and sign-up details. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.